Blog Talk Radio.
The Visionary Hotspot. Talk radio with the consciousness of women, for women, by women. A radio show bridging the gap among women desiring their purpose with the world's greatest minds, achievers, and believers of women's progress. The Visionary Hotspot. Inspiring, encouraging, enlightening, and empowering women to live life as our greatest self. I am you, you are me, and we are visionary women.
Hello, hello, and welcome everyone to the Visionary Hotspot Talk Radio. And today we are here with our amazing, amazing guest, Rachel Rosen. Rachel, how are you? Yes, everyone. Well, today we're having a little bit of connectivity problems today, as usual, guys. But today we're talking about building walls or bridges on the border. What will bring healing to our society? We'll have that answer in a few moments. Yes, everyone. So today we are here with the amazing, amazing Rachel Rosen. How are you, Rachel?
I'm doing really well. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. The connectivity is on my end, but I'm so glad to have you with us today as we are talking about, everyone, building walls or bridges on the border. What will bring healing to our society? Rachel, tell me, why is this conversation so near and dear to you?
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you for hosting this conversation and for having me. It's a real honor to be here. And I mean, the notion of building walls versus bridges is something that's very close to my heart. As someone who actually grew up in Texas and one of my closest friends has family in Laredo and on a border town, and so I'm very clear about the impact that border towns have. I've uh-huh. heard through my closest friend. But more importantly, I mean, or not more importantly, but in my personal experience, I'm an educator, I'm a leader, and I'm somebody who lives to bring the next generation to a world that has more empathy, more understanding, more peace, more justice. And I think building a wall is a quick fix, and it doesn't get at the root cause of some of the tension and the trauma that our country has experienced. And so when we first chatted about this notion of communities needing to build more bridges, I was really compelled with that conversation, not necessarily because of the politics of it, but because of my background in leadership development and organizational development and systems. It's really close to my heart to
right.
bring people together to actually have conversations about what's really going on.
You know, that's fascinating, because when I think in terms of building bridges and or building walls, if we look at the mm-hmm. components of the operations of each one,
mm-hmm.
walls tend to keep something in or keep something out. But the bridges
right.
allow flow to come through,
mm-hmm.
passing back
mm-hmm.
and forth. And
mm-hmm.
when we think in terms of people being just, you know, we are migrant people. We don't stay in one place, you know, which is how most
right.
of us got here. We came from somewhere else. So when we think in terms of a wall or a bridge, the better question is this supposed to keep people out, or are we looking at this from the wrong angle, or is it supposed to keep us in?
Right, right. Exactly. I mean, it's just it's problematic in so many numbers of ways, and I think the truth is the ever-changing landscape of our country and the demographics of our country
mm-hmm.
is real, and a physical structure is not going to stop human beings from flowing in the way that they need to flow. I mean, we're a country
yes.
that's built off of people who have come here for more opportunities and more access, and that's always been, and we are a country of immigrants. We are called the melting pot. And so when people separate themselves and compartmentalize and as bell hooks calls othering and belonging, when we other each other, we get into
mm-hmm.
these traps and pitfalls that are really problematic.
Yes, yes. And, you know, here's another problem that I'm finding with this whole idealism. And, you know, all of a sudden everyone's a nationalist. It's amazing to me how we drank this Kool-Aid. Everyone is a nationalist, an American nationalist. But here's where my problem comes in. There is nothing wrong, ideally wrong, with loving your country and loving where you came from, et cetera. My only problem that I'm having with this idea of walls is that we don't realize how compartmentalized we become when we have no access to the outside world. When you are consumed with all things red, white, and blue, or you are simply consumed with the ideas that flow within mainstream media, or you are only consumed with your own thoughts. How about that? You find yourself in a way where you're never enlightened, you're never inspired, because you are completely in a state of where you are. There's no aspirations of evolvement. So how do we realize or come to a realization that walls not only box you in physically, but they box you in spiritually and emotionally and mentally?
Yes, yes. They're, I mean, they're the ultimate symbol to me. I mean, my background is in, like I said, education and leadership and organization studies, and also racial equity and racial justice. And so I, you know, if you think about the history of our country, it's founded on by a system of oppression. We have been, you know, if you just simply strip away everything and you think about the founding fathers created the system of education on a two-track system. So it was set up and designed with great intentionality to actually have one track for the what they defined as the learned, and then one track for the impoverished. And they were very clear about, they literally, the language that Jefferson used was, we'll let a few, I'm paraphrasing now, but I know he used the term rubbish. He said that they would scrape up a few young people, scrape from the rubbish to have access to an education. But it was this unequal system to begin with. And so when you think about the design of the fabric of our country has been designed to advantage some and disadvantage others, a wall represents oppression to me. It represents keeping people out and one person having power over others. And it's more than a symbol. It's more than a symbol to me. You know, it will harm lives and communities, and it sets up country as the ultimate other, trying to either keep people out or keep people in. And what I'm most concerned about is it doesn't get at the root cause of what's happening in our country. And so, you know, when you think about, if you have a broken bone and there's pain that people are in, and there are communities that are divided, putting a Band-Aid on a bone that's broken isn't going to heal it. It's actually going to just serve as a, you know, a symptomatic cure, and then it will go, it won't, you know, the bone will still be broken. And I feel like that's what this administration is trying to do, in essence, which is the wall is a symbol, but it's like, it's not going to get at the root cause of what's really going on. People for centuries have figured out ways to work around walls and cross them and break them down and hide. And like, we know this doesn't work. And so it's just baffling to me that this would be the solution.
Well, you know what I find fascinating when you were talking about this administration is because I find that this wall has already been created well before Donald Trump. So what do I mean by that? We have always lived in a system with an invisible wall that keeps certain people out and other people in. I mean, if that wasn't the case, then we wouldn't have gentrification. You can't go in Harlem, New York, right now and find a reasonable place to live for an affordable price. You simply cannot. So what I'm trying to, I guess, quantify or trying to get across is that this wall that is being discussed to be built was something that was invisibly there all this time. And now it's coming to a place where it is now becoming a physical, tangible thing. But it's already existed. So why do we take the funk and pretend that this is not something systemic that has, as you mentioned, Thomas Jefferson, has always been there. It has always been there, which is why you have good neighborhoods and bad neighborhoods. really great schools and really bad schools. If that wasn't the case, then those invisible walls that have kept us in all this time would not be a problem. So now it's becoming a tangible thing, and now we have a problem with it. So the better question is, what is wrong with us? Not with Donald Trump. We can clearly see what's wrong with him. Okay, that's obvious. The better question is, if we're going to keep this conversation honest, what's wrong with us? Because we have accepted these conditions over centuries. And now all of a sudden, eyes are open. They should have been open with Obama. They should have been open with George W. Bush and his father. They should have been open with Clinton, too. I mean, when we think in terms of the prison industrial complex, why we didn't protest on that? I mean, those are considered walls. When you imprison people, you can't keep them locked up without a wall. So when we think in terms of these walls, they have already been there. Why are we now, as a society, complaining?
No, I think you bring up a lot of great points, Charmaine. I think the truth is, just like this conversation, you know, the reason I was sharing my reflections on the wall itself was because that was the question you posed. But if you want to talk about, the invisible tensions and the systems of oppression that are in the water that we're just swimming in, the air we're breathing in, because the fabric of our country was not designed for all citizens.
Exactly.
I'm with you, and I think it's important. What just like the wall represents a concrete representation of some of the worst sides of our country, I think Donald Trump also does that. And I think some people were in disbelief or in a little bit of there was a level of, I'll speak for myself in my community, as a white woman in this world, someone who grew up in Texas, there was an assumption that, I mean, my mother is very progressive and liberal, and she was always active and doing involved in local politics and having me be understood and versed and well-read in what was going on, because that was one of her deep values. And I think I was very fortunate and privileged in so many ways. And I think some folks in my community, friend groups or college groups or workplace groups, in the past 10 years, there was a little bit of almost like disillusionment with the Obama administration of here's this amazing man, and oh, the times are changing, there is hope, and he represents a shift in our country, and over half of America voted for him, so over half of America must be like-minded and believe in, you know, the right things, justice, humanity, helping others, and I think there was a little bit of perhaps rose-colored glasses that people were wearing during his administration, right?
Yes.
And so then you get into this mindset of, oh, well, things must be good, so I don't have to fight, because I'm unaware. You know, I was just having a conversation about people who live a life of privilege. It's like they're sleeping, and you don't know that you're asleep until someone wakes you up, right, and says, hey, you're dreaming, you know. I think some people think that they're more active or awake or self-aware than perhaps they are, and I speak from personal experience because I don't want to make assumptions about other people, but I know that is a phenomena that happens out there that I think what the Trump administration has shed light on is some of the worst sides of our country are alive and well. In fact, they're thriving, and they are doing incredible harm to communities and young people. And this is a very, very serious matter. And I think it woke a lot of people up out of their perhaps rose-colored glasses sleeping stage.
Yeah, but Rachel, I wondered when I asked this question, I wondered to myself sometimes if we're really being honest with ourselves in terms of the true systematic and parallel paradigm in which we live. I'm a black woman living in Tennessee from Brooklyn, New York, and I see, and I'm married to a Hebrew man with little Hebrew babies, and I'm telling you, there is something wrong with a society that has an issue with walls, with racism, with bigotry, when it's at its worst state, but it doesn't have it a problem with it as long as it sounds good to your ears. So what do I mean by that? Remember back in the day, you know, people used to say it's not so much what you say, but it's what you do that's most important. And it's interesting to me because when we think of systemically how this is set up, when Barack Obama came into office, we were under one of the greatest recessions since the Depression, if not the greatest recession since the Depression. When we line up every single ethnic group, African-Americans overwhelmingly lost 50% of the African-American wealth was wiped out. Only 15% of that wealth has been recovered. So when we think in terms of how systemically, and I'm talking about as of today, has been recovered under a black president. Oh, Trump just got here in January. So when we have this conversation, let's really look at it, because I wonder to myself if it's more socioeconomical and it's playing out in a way where we're pinning each other against one another, or is it really a racial thing that came on the backside of Donald Trump? Because he's only one man, and one man does not have control of a population of over a billion people in one country. So when we think in terms of that, how honest are we when we say, okay, listen, the recession might have been over for Wall Street, honey, but on the regular street where black people live, where Caucasian people live, where low-income people live, where lower-income Caucasian people live, where Asian people live, and poverty Hispanic people live, no, it's really not over. Not when we're talking about you go to poverty.org on the governmental offsite website and 25% of the United States children's population from the age of 18 to infancy, 25% go hungry every day. That says something about us as a nation. So how honest are we?
I mean, I only you know how honest you're being, and only I know how honest I'm being. That's the thing, is that people are in a time, this is the, I'll speak, you know, what I, my, what I'm hearing you say is, there's a your hunch is that people are either lying or not being honest with either themselves or their community. Is that right?
No, actually, what I'm saying is this problem has existed for hundreds of years. Why get up and complain about it now? Why didn't we protest this very thing a year ago, 2 years ago? Why, you know what I'm saying? Why didn't we protest this in large numbers, as you're an educated woman, I'm an educated woman? Why didn't we argue these very issues under any president? I could care less if it was Barack Obama, Clinton, whomever, when it came to student loans that you can't forgive. Why are we talking about tangible walls instead of the walls that we have already lived under and conditioned under, and now we're lifting our voices? I'm just wondering to myself, why haven't we done this already? One of my dearest friends in yours, too, said it was a form of complacency. And I think that's what it is. As long as we're comfortable enough, we don't complain. But the second that we become uncomfortable, it's like, oh, no, 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 now there's a problem. So that's what I'm saying. Like, how did we get to this place, and what is the motivating force, and how do we change it? Because we can debate back and forth. What we know the issues. How do we change it?
I appreciate those reflections, because it gets at the heart of what I understood when you said, are we being honest with yourself? This is the question that I wanted to explore, because the how do we change it piece, the answer is complex, and this is my opinion. This is my experience, given my expertise in what I do, facilitating conversations about racial justice and racial equity. What I know to be true is that this is very systemic and this is very complex work. And so the concrete, people are drawn to quick fixes, because just like if I asked you to run a marathon tomorrow with no training, you would probably say, no, thank you. I'll take the, you know, 5-minute workout that's going to get me the same results. I would rather have a personal trainer come in, not make me work so hard. You know, people, I think we're pain averse. We're conflict averse by nature. We innately, our bodies and our brains, because I've studied neuroscience and what it means to be a culturally responsive teacher with the brain in mind. I geeked out on neuroscience stuff in grad school, and most recently it's been fascinating to me to think about, okay, so if we imagine this metaphor of running a marathon, or if we imagine this work as building a new muscle that we've never used before, it can be very uncomfortable, it can be painful, it can be uneasy to have conversations that you are not practiced in. And so the truth is, I think people tend to be drawn to the easy answer because it requires less discomfort. And we are wired to avoid discomfort because our brain
makes
says, our brain tells us to fight, flight, or freeze when our safety is at risk. And so literally that's why people are having an increase in tension. There's an increase in divorce right now. There's like an increase in all this anger and aggression because our brains are saying something's wrong, but I don't have the capacity to do something about this. And so other people are freezing and saying, I'm afraid of saying the wrong thing. And then some people are running away and just saying, I'm shutting down my Facebook. I don't want to deal with it. I'm just going to watch TV. You know, everybody has their own coping mechanism. But the truth is the work is not going to be easy. And if we really, really, really want to heal and we want to bridge divides and actually, what we're talking about here is not just systemic oppression. We're talking about the residual effects of all of this too. All the systemic trauma that people have had, communities of color, people have residual trauma that they have now manifested in their bones, in their beings, of just pain that their communities have been living through. And so if we think one quick wall is going to heal that divide, neuroscience would suggest that we're crazy. Like, that's just not, it's not impossible. It's going to take time and a commitment to being uncomfortable in service of lifting up our communities all together.
And you know what's so funny, Rachel, because one of the things that came to my spirit when you were talking was the understanding of also saying, I can pose a question of what the problem is, but I'm not qualified to give the answer. You know, I think a lot of times we all want to be an expert at everything. And the truth of the matter is that I'm not qualified to give you an answer. I can tell you what the problems are, but I can't say, society, listen to Charmaine, this is how we fix it. I'm not qualified. Mm-hmm. You know, if I have a tumor in my brain, God forbid, I'm not going to go to a podiatrist for a tumor in my brain.
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying? So my point is, I'm one of those rare people who will say, listen, I can tell you the problem. I'm good at that. But I am not qualified to give you the answer. So I'm wondering to myself, how do we as a nation, as a society, start to say, okay, listen, let's get those who are very great at, you know, shedding light on the issues, but then let's also get those who are qualified to actually fix the problem. Because I'm certainly not going to call, you know, a Sprint who's dealing with my cell phone to come and fix my DirecTV satellite. It's just not going to work. But they're not experts in that field. So how do we do that?
I love that. I appreciate you lifting that up, and I love your humility and your authenticity, because the truth is, and this comes back to your mission of the visionary woman and supporting women and lifting up women, I think we as women, we need more people like you who are willing to say, I don't have all the answers and I'm not afraid to say it. You know, I don't claim to be an expert in PR or marketing or branding. I am a community connector. I facilitate and I coach. And I don't claim to be anybody else. And I'll tell you that I don't have the best website. And I'll tell you that my strength is not Facebook Live. That's not my favorite thing to do. I love being with people. And so I have to be okay with in my own skin and to be aware of my strengths and my weaknesses and have a level of humility, I think, a little distance from my ego, and a commitment to lifting other women up. Like if we could now walk away from this conversation, whoever women are listening, it's like, great, who are three women that you can lift up? Here, I may not have the answer, but let me tell you who does. I know Rachel, I know Charmaine, I know Leah, I know, right? And let me help you help them, because I think when we shine on each other and we lift each other up, it is so powerful. And what happens is, I just did a training on this recently, when it comes to oppression for communities and women in particular, women who have been fighting to get a seat at the table, and it's been a struggle just to even get the education that they have and get a seat to the table. Then when all of their education or all of their career, they've been against or competing against other women, it can be really hard to say, you know what? I want to support you, but you were just fighting me for this job, and I worked hard to get to the table, and here are all these men telling me I look pretty and I don't have what it takes to lead this conversation, versus the men get treated differently. You know, I think there's this this notion called transferred oppression. There's transference, where people in oppressed communities actually transfer the very oppression that they hate onto one another.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that we have to be cautioned of that, and to lift each other up takes a different level of distance from your ego, you know?
Yes. Oh, my God. Rachel, you are so fantastic. And with all my sincerity, I am so glad that you came on this show, because although we did not give specifics, 1, 2, 3 of what we can do, we at least agreed that there are walls that we all can help bring down. Rachel, when my audience wants to reach you, we want to contact you, we want to get to know you, how do we do that?
Yes, well, there are a lot of things that your folks can do, and I'll say this. The first step, I can give you 3 things that are very easy. Step number one,
now do
listen.
3 quick things, because we got 60 seconds.
Okay. Oh, 60 seconds. Okay. Number one, listen first. Number two, show courageous curiosity. Don't assume.
Okay.
Don't be certain about other people's experience. Listen with fearlessness.
Okay.
Show courageous curiosity. And number 3, stay at the table. Don't leave. Don't do the fight, flight, or freeze. And to stay at the table, this gets me to the next segue, which is my card game that I created called Spark for Humanity, which brings communities together. And it's SPARK and the number 4, humanity.com is my website. And I'm hosting facilitating community conversations. I sell the game. Sorry, I'm now rushing. But I sell the game and I facilitate community conversations. I also do leadership coaching and workshops for communities that really want to focus on building bridges and coming together. So how's that?
Oh, that is wonderful. Listen, that was a heck of a segue. Listen, we're talking about building walls or bridges with the wonderful Rachel Rosen. Everyone, remember, you can always reach me, Charmaine Caraway at thevisionarywoman.com. We'll see you next Thursday. Talk to you next Thursday at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. That's at 347-989-8564. Talk to you soon. Bye.